It's a down-home love language conversation today on Building Relationships with Dr. Gary Chapman.
I find myself criticizing him in my head and thinking he's not manly like he should be.
How do you go from feeling like none of your needs are being met to back to healthy?
And now we're just untrusting and angry at each other.
I gotta not follow the tingly.
Welcome to Building Relationships with Dr. Gary Chapman, author of the New York Times bestseller, The Five Love Languages. Today, questions from callers who have real concerns about life, relationships, and of course, the five love languages. That's straight ahead on a special Dear Gary broadcast.
Special because we had Dr. Gary Chapman in the Fabry Studios near Tucson, Arizona. This was back in July. Andrea, you had your photo with Gary down in the kitchen. I had my photo with Gary right here in the studio. And it was a real treat to see him face to face.
Oh, it was. And listeners may not realize when we prepare a conversation on this program, Gary is usually in North Carolina. We're pretty much always in Arizona, and Steve and Janice are working in Chicago.
So we are all over the map, but I've been amazed these past 11 years or so at how much we feel together in the conversation. It feels like we're right next to each other, and I think part of that is the technology, but also every program we have has one goal, and that is to enrich your relationships, to help you express love to the people around you. So we're going to do that today by playing a conversation that Gary and I had on the program that I host each weekday, Chris Fabry Live.
And if you go to our website, you will see our featured resource for today. It's a book that Gary has written along with co-author Jolene Filo, and it's titled Sharing Love Abundantly in Special Needs Families, The Five Love Languages for Parents Raising Children with Disabilities. And if you'd like to know more about it, just go to fivelovelanguages.com. Again, fivelovelanguages.com.
And a program note, we have a two-part series that will begin airing the first two weekends of October, so coming up next weekend, and they deal specifically with that topic of special needs families. The second program is a conversation with Jolene, who wrote the book with Gary. But in 1 week, you have to join us to hear Grace Anna. The doctors said she wouldn't live. She nearly died during an operation when she was very young. But you will not only hear what her mom has learned from Grace Anna, you'll hear her herself. She sings Amazing Grace. That's coming up next week. Don't you dare miss it.
And now on your program, Chris Fabry Live, you do something called the Friday Sigh.
Right.
It's a fun week-ending exercise, as I understand it.
That's right. We do it every Friday. We oxygenate your blood, Andrea, get your endorphins going. It's really everything I've learned from you about breathing. And at the end of the sigh, you take in 4 seconds of air, you hold it 4 seconds, and then you let it out. And I did an extended humorous welcome to Dr. Chapman with some historical references that go right with him.
So, and be sure you hear the lilt in Chris's voice as he introduces Dr. Chapman. You can tell how excited he is to welcome his guest and surprise him.
Yeah.
So here we go from this past July on Moody Radio.
Today's sigh is dedicated to Generalissimo Love Language. Born on a mountaintop in North Carolina, studied at Moody Bible Institute. He's been at the same church for nearly 50 years. He's been married to the same woman 10 years longer than that. He's helped countless couples move toward each other with words of affirmation, physical touch, acts of service, gifts, and quality time. He's helped parents love their children better, children love their parents better. He's given hope to the separated. He's fostered appreciation in the workplace, and he's done it all with a pastor's heart. We salute this man today who has said, "The family that sighs together oxygenates together. Void where prohibited." Dr. Gary Chapman.
You make me want to meet this guy.
How are you?
I'm doing great, Chris.
Right across the desk from me, we never see each other. When we do Building Relationships on the weekend or when we do this program, it's usually you're one place, I'm another. Today we're together.
Yeah.
Isn't that beautiful?
Absolutely. And right here in Arizona, looking out over the mountains and the desert, I mean, it is incredible. I think if I had a sight like this, I might be a radio man like you.
Well, you neglected to say how hot it was outside.
Oh, yeah. Well, it was 100 degrees, but we're inside, and I'm glad.
I talked with somebody earlier today about you, someone from a publisher that I know. And I said, "Gary Chapman's coming over. We're going to do the program together." And she said, "Oh, Gary Chapman, he has such a calming influence everywhere he goes." And I'd never thought about it quite like that. But I think she's right. There's something about you know, you are steady, you are faithful, you're unflappable. Do you agree with that?
Well, I'd like to think that I do bring a sense of calm to people. You know, when you've been a counselor as long as I have, you're dealing with people who aren't calm when they walk in the door. They typically are really struggling with things. And, you know, a big part of a counselor's job is just to listen and let people know that you want to hear what they have to say, you know, enter into their world. And I think God blessed me with a good dose of empathy, that when I hear people, I can feel their pain. And in the early years, that was a problem because I'd go home with their pain every afternoon, you know, really just the burden of all these people on my heart. And Carolyn and I would talk about it, and I said, yeah, I got to find an answer to this. So I had to learn how, once I finished the counseling session, to release the people to God, you know, give them my full attention when I'm with them, but when they walk out the door, release them to God. And, you know, I can't help them when I'm not with them, so why should I carry the emotional burden of that? But I think every counselor has to deal with that.
Gary, isn't that the whole put your oxygen mask on before you help somebody else?
Yeah, absolutely, because after a while, counseling people every week, I was just burdened down with all the pain. You know, it seemed like the whole world was in pain, you know? I wasn't trying to carry it. I was just, it was just there. And I had to learn how to release that to God and pray for them, you know, pray for them, but let God work with them through the week. And then when they come back, I'll give them my attention again.
Did you ever get into a counseling situation where you felt like you missed something, you know, you didn't listen well, or you were preoccupied with something else?
Well, you know, Chris, I can focus on what I'm doing, so I pretty much stay with the person. But there have been many, many times in the process of counseling that I would be hearing things and I would have no idea where to go with that. And I'm saying to God silently, God, I need your wisdom here. And it's amazing how many times God would bring things to my mind that once, you know, I'd listen to them, I would share. That was exactly what they needed and really, really helpful to them. You know, a long time ago, Chris, I learned John 15:5, where Jesus said, I'm the vine, you're the branches. You stay connected to me, you bear fruit. Without me, you can do nothing. I'm keenly aware of that. Whether I'm counseling or whether I'm speaking or whether I'm on the radio, you know, without him, I can do nothing. I mean, he gives us the breath we have, you know, and every time I sit down to write, I'm saying, God, give me a breath of your wisdom. Give me a drop of your creativity. You know, I'm not a writer, but I want, if you want me to write, then you give it to me. So yeah, I think from the very early stages of my counseling and ministry, I learned not to depend on my wisdom, but on the wisdom of God.
One of the books you've written is Love's a Verb. That came out a few years ago, and it talks about, you know, the action nature of this. It goes right along with the five love languages, which you're well known for. Yesterday, we had a guest who was talking about the J curve and how you following Jesus, you have to descend, you have to go through death before you go into resurrection, which I'm seeing in different aspects of my own life and the church. But he said something, I'm paraphrasing, he said, anytime you love, it will bring pain to you. If you love well, loving someone else always brings a measure of pain. I thought about that. And let's say everything goes well in a relationship and then that person dies, you're in pain. I mean, do you agree with that, that loving someone else will foster at some point a pain, a struggle?
I don't know, Chris, that I've ever thought of it that way. But as you say that, I'm identifying with it. I have this sense of, yeah, and that's what I was describing earlier, really. I'm feeling the pain of these people, and I'm loving them. I'm there because I care about them, but I am feeling the pain of that. So, yeah, I think that's probably true.
Yeah, there's a C.S. Lewis quote that talks about it. You love anything, you know. If you want your life to be free of pain, don't love, you know, don't move toward anybody else. You flew from North Carolina. You got up at like 1:30. You were at the airport at 1:30.
No, I was at the airport. Well, 1:30 your time.
Yes.
4:30 Eastern time.
So, you know, so you're just going all over the place every weekend. And I wondered, do people recognize you in airports? Do they stop you and say, hey, can you sign my boarding pass?
You know, Chris, not often, to be very honest with you. Once in a while, someone will. I'll C-pump someone looking at me, you know, and I look back and they're looking at me again, and I kind of smile and they smile, and then they come over and say, "Are you Gary Chapman?" But no, it doesn't happen very often, to be honest.
So let's talk with some folks who want to talk with you. This is where you really shine. Sarah is in Bloomington, Illinois. Hi, Sarah. Go right ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just have a question for you. I grew up in a home with a dad who was more of an outdoorsy type of a guy. He liked to hunt and fish and worked outside. And now I'm married to someone who is more of an office guy, and he doesn't enjoy those outdoor things. And I find myself criticizing him in my head and thinking he's not manly like he should be. So how do I deal with that?
I don't think I've ever heard that question before, Sarah. I'm glad you asked it. I don't know that I have a good answer, but I'll tell you my thoughts. You know, I think anytime, or all of us, when we grow up, if we have a good relationship with our dad, we assume that real men are going to look kind of like my dad. If your dad had been an office person, you would have assumed that all men are kind of like that. The reality is men are as different as women. And we are all unique. God made us unique. And I think if we can come back, particularly as Christians, and recognize that reality, that God made all of us unique. Some of us are outdoors people. I'm not, but some people are. And others are office people and a whole lot of other categories we could put people in. But I think realizing that we are unique, it is of God, and then affirming that to the other person. And to your own mind, because what I hear you saying is you're not telling him that he's unmanly. You're saying that in your mind. I just wish he was more like my dad. So I think if you can tell yourself, you know, my husband is the person God made him to be, and I am glad that he's my husband.
What do you say to that, Sarah?
Helpful.
Yeah, good. I'm glad you called. Another caller asks this question. I don't feel romantic love for my fiance, but he's an incredible man of God who loves me so well. We have the same ministry desires. We're best friends. He's physically attractive. I just don't love him romantically. What should I do?
I think I would ask, how long have you been dating? Because we know that what we typically call romantic love or falling in love has an average lifespan of 2 years. So if you've been dating for 3 or 4 years, or close friends for 3 or 4 years, then it would be normal that you would come down off that high and you would not be feeling what you felt earlier. My question also would be, did you ever have romantic feelings for him? Because if you didn't, then that's a different story altogether. I have seen people who told me they did not have romantic feelings, but everything else seemed to gel, and they married and had a wonderful life together. We do know that what we call romantic feelings, or the in-love euphoria, is not the foundation for a marriage. A lot of other things are far more important than that, because as I said earlier, that is temporary. Even if you had it, you're going to come down off that high. This is why learning each other's love language and speaking each other's love language so that you keep emotional warmth in the relationship. You know, you do feel loved. It's not euphoric, but you feel secure in their love, that they really care about you and your well-being. This is the kind of love that you build a marriage on. Not the euphoric, romantic kind of love, but this deep sense that we're committed to each other, we love each other, we genuinely are there for each other. That's the kind of love that is the emotional foundation for a healthy marriage.
If they do get married, though, and she's, you know, she had the tingles 4 years ago, yeah, that you talk about, she doesn't feel that right now. So they get married, they start life together, and then she meets somebody else, and she's suddenly attracted to him romantically or with the tingles, then she could say, I must have met the wrong, you know, I married the wrong person.
Yeah. I think that often happens, Chris. And especially when our differences emerge, because sometimes when we're dating or we're good friends, our differences really don't emerge and we don't end up with real conflicts. But every couple, every married couple will have conflicts. And we have to learn how to solve those conflicts. But sometimes because we don't, we end up arguing, we end up saying hateful things to each other, and then we begin to wonder, wait a minute, maybe I did make a mistake. If we were meant for each other, we wouldn't be having all these problems. And yes, someone else can come along. We get an emotional attachment to them and we say, ooh, I did marry the wrong one. That happens a lot. And that's why I really try to make the point that the emotional love that we have when we say we've fallen in love or we're romantically in love with the other person is a temporary phenomena. And if you understand that going in, it'll help you. And if you understand that we will have conflicts, I don't care how close you are in your friendship, you will have conflicts. And you'll have to learn how to emotionally listen to each other empathetically, try to understand what the other person's saying, learn how to resolve conflicts in a positive way rather than arguing. So I'd say the two of you working through a book on marriage or a couple of books on marriage, this chapter a week or chapter every 2 weeks and discussing those things, that would be the preparation I think you would need before you really marry.
Dr. Gary Chapman's with us today. We go to Pam on the line in Illinois. Hi, Pam. Go right ahead.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. Sure. My husband and I last year did an intensive after 32 years of marriage and not doing well. And we are just at a standstill now. I was wondering what Dr. Chapman would recommend. I've been in counseling for several years. He's not willing to do that. I was grief-stricken after my mom's death and wasn't able to follow through with what we learned on our intensive. And now we're just untrusting and angry at each other. How do we move forward after 33 years?
Well, I'm glad that you're going for counseling. I think that's important because you need someone with whom you can process the emotions that you're feeling and the pain that you're feeling. I do wish that your husband would go with you. However, you can't make somebody go for counseling. But obviously, things need to change. It will not get better simply with the passing of time. So any step would be positive. For example, if he would be willing to read the first chapter of a book, I normally say to ladies, don't ever ask your husband to read a book. Ask him if he'd read the first chapter and tell you what he thinks about it. And most men will do that. And then perhaps a little later he'll read the second chapter and you're getting an outside voice. He's getting an outside voice coming in. Or maybe go to a conference. You know, Family Life Today puts on conferences all over the country, Friday night, Saturday, Sunday. I do a Saturday seminar several times a year throughout the states. Something like that. Anything that it will expose the two of you to ideas that have the potential for helping you. You have to take steps. Otherwise, things do not improve simply with the passing of time.
Mm. Pam, is he interested in spiritual things? Do you guys go to church together? You have a small group together? Anything like that?
Unfortunately, it's a divided household of Catholic versus Protestant.
Yeah. So there's that spiritual fissure in there that, you know, you probably argue about a spiritual thing sometimes, probably.
Yes. Yes. I know we have the same belief in the same God, but how that looks is very different. Yeah. Our relationship with Christ, it's just all very different. And he says he will not divorce me because he's Catholic and he made a vow. Yet I feel I'm being punished because I left. I was raised in a different Protestant church and decided to become Catholic, and it didn't work for me. And I found more freedom in the evangelical side, and I've been accused of being a church hopper, and I consider it spiritual growth. Yeah. And I did use the word divorce, and that has been held over my head for years.
Well, you know, the Catholic Church does have a really good marriage program for couples that are struggling. And I would encourage you, if you call the local Catholic Church and find out if they have this program for couples that are struggling, and I would encourage you to go with him to that. He's more likely to go to that because he's Catholic, but it is a good program. I think it could be very helpful. So, you know, finding some place where both of you can get help together, that's what's needed at this juncture. And so I would definitely check that out.
Do you have any hope for Pam? Because I hear just there's this is it's been going like this for 33 years. Yeah. And you said if it doesn't change, it's going to keep on going.
Yeah. Well, you know, Chris, I have a book called Loving Your Spouse When You Feel Like Walking Away. And it's written to people who are right where Pam is, you know, who are feeling like we've tried things, it's not working, it's not getting any better, you feel like walking away. I would encourage you to read that book. It's written not to the both of you, it's written to you. And it's talking about the power of influence, because you either have a positive influence on your husband or you have a negative influence on your husband. And in that book, I'm talking about how to have a positive influence, how to be God's hand in having a positive influence on your spouse. I think you'd find that book to be helpful and give you some ideas on steps you can take.
Now let's go to Lynn in Pennsylvania. Hi, Lynn. Go right ahead.
Hi there. Kind of a dilemma here. We are parents of three grown children who are in the ministry. We have ourselves been in, well, we're lay people, but we took it upon ourselves for 7 years to go and do mission work. We're getting older. Well, I'm not dealing well with that at all. but what do you do with the fact that as you get older, you're less valuable, and as our children's ministries go, they have less time to be with us? How do you deal with that?
People struggle differently with aging, and a lot of it has to do with health, as well as not only physical health, but mental health, emotional health. All of us are going to get older, Lynn. It's a whole lot better than dying, except that we do go to heaven when
That's
we die.
Right. Yeah. Where is that?
My wife had cancer 7 years ago and went through chemotherapy for a year and came near death. And now 7 years later, she's doing wonderful. And she just had a birthday and somebody said, "How do you feel about being as old as you are?" She said, "I love it. I'm alive." So think about it that way. You're alive, you know? And yes, there are changes. And yes, sometimes our adult children will have less time for us because they are involved in ministry and other things. But I think we have to adapt to our capabilities. But as long as you have physical abilities and as long as you're mentally healthy and spiritually, it obviously appears like you're walking with God, just ask God to show you how to invest the last years of your life. You know, there's as long as you're alive, God has plans for you. He has something for you to do. And we find the greatest satisfaction in life when we are serving others in the name of Christ. So you've done it in the past. You've done mission work. You know all about it. Ask God, what is my mission at this stage of my life? It may be different from anything you've done before. But as long as you have life, God has things for you to do.
I like Lynn's perspective because she's not pushing down this fact that, and I feel there's something, you know, that's discombobulated with what's going on here. So she's willing to say, I've got this feeling. Now, what do I do with it? Most people, even in Christian in the church, they'll say, well, I shouldn't feel that way, so I'm not going to feel that way. And they feel that way no matter whether they want to or not.
Yeah, absolutely. You can't talk yourself out of feelings. We don't choose our feelings. We do choose our attitudes, the way we think. And we do choose our behavior. So let's say you feel depressed or you feel discouraged or you feel kind of down emotionally. You don't say, I shouldn't do that, and you don't try to deny that. But you say to God, Lord, I'm feeling down today. I'm feeling discouraged today. I'm feeling like my life is not as useful as it used to be. So give me wisdom. What step could I take to be in line with what you want me to be doing at this juncture in my life? So we acknowledge our feelings, but we don't serve our feelings. And we ask God to give us wisdom on what we can do that would be profitable for ourselves as well as for other people.
Dr. Gary Chapman is in studio with me today, and we're taking your calls. We're talking about the love languages and a whole lot more. As I said at the beginning of the program, there is just something about his voice. I've experienced Gary's calming nature through the last few years. There have been blips in my life where I've given Gary a call or sent an email, and he's called me up and says, Chris, what in the world's going on? And there is just something about talking with someone who's been down the trail a little bit further than you have. And I sense that with the callers here today. Let's go to Tennessee. Wes is on the line for Dr. Gary Chapman. Hi there, Wes. Go right ahead.
Hey, Dr. Chapman.
Yes, sir.
my wife and I have been married for 19 years. There's been great times. There's been some pretty bad times, most of them due to my transgressions. But we've managed to keep it somewhat together. We have four amazing children. But of late, we've never been able to find time for us. We're very much yes people, both of us. Over this last year, our oldest is 18, and there's been a lot of struggles. He's been going through a lot of things, really, really tough things that have really hurt us as a family and almost split us up marriage-wise. I know what my wife's love languages are. It's quality time, and I'm really, really bad at giving her quality time. And everything that's happened over the last year has been that much worse. So I tried to set a date up tonight. So basically she's at the point where she's ready to leave and be done with it being our marriage. And I set up a date for tonight. Some other things happened with our oldest yesterday, kind of got in an argument. And she pretty much said that I could take the kids tonight. She wasn't going. So I told her I still want to go with her. That I'm still planning on us going tonight and at least talking. How do I approach her tonight at dinner if she goes?
Yeah. Well, I think when you've gone through a lot of stress with a child, it does put pressure on a marriage. And as you said, when there's been what you're calling a transgression in the past, the pain, the memory of that and the pain with that comes back many times to kind of haunt the person who was hurt by that, even after they forgive. So obviously, at least it appears to me, your wife is very stressed at this juncture. And it almost seems to her like the easiest thing for her is to get out and get away from the pressure, both in the marriage and also with the children, at least some of the children. Rather than trying to tell her something, if she goes with you tonight, to say to her, you know, I know that you are hurt. I know that you're disappointed. Tell me how you really feel at this juncture in our relationship. And be a listener rather than a talker. And let her share where she is and try to understand and maybe even get to the place where you can say, you know, honey, I can see how you'd be ready to give up. I really can. And I know that I'm not the husband that I want to be, but I do believe God can help me become that person. If you had to make one suggestion to me on what would make me a better husband, what would you say? And then listen to what she says. And she may say, it's too late, you can't do anything, you know, and I understand that. That may be her response. But if she says something, then you take it to heart and you say, I am going to ask God to give me the ability to do what you just said. I want to be the husband that you deserve, and I fully acknowledge that I have not always been that. And I know we're both stressed out over our son, but I believe that together we would be better parents than we would be separated. That'd be the kind of the approach I would take. Now, let's face it, you cannot make her stay in the marriage. If she chooses to separate, then that's going to be her choice, you know. But even if she does, I would say you take the attitude not to preach to her about she's doing wrong, but to say to her, you know, you can leave if you choose to do that, but I will still love you. I will always love you. You don't condemn her. You don't tell her she's doing wrong. Hopefully it won't come to that. But if it does, you tell her, I'll always love you. And I want to do everything I can to enrich your life. Even if you choose not to live with me, I want to do what I can to enrich your life. Obviously, I haven't met your needs at this point, but I want to. You know, it's that kind of humility, that kind of approach to the relationship when a person's under stress. You're likely to have far more positive response to that.
Wes, what do you think?
I think that'll be great. I've been praying the whole way home. I got a 2-hour drive that she goes with me.
Yeah.
Tonight. So yeah. Thank you.
Well, if she doesn't, don't let that signal defeat for you. And I think you agree with me, Gary.
Yeah, that's not the end. You know, if she says, I'm not going with you, you take the kids, I'm not going with you. And then you say, okay, honey, if that's the way you feel, obviously, I have to respect that. and you take the kids and go. But that doesn't mean that that's the end, because maybe next week or maybe another, soon, she will go out with you and do something. And in the meantime, you can say to her, honey, is there something you'd really like for us to do together other than just eat? I mean, we can go eat. I'd love to go out with you to eat. But is there something you'd like for me to do with you or for you that would make life easier for you, that would make life better for you? Those are the kind of questions that if she'll give you an answer, then you have a clue as to what you might do.
Maybe tonight is, maybe a breakthrough tonight could be, I'm not going to go. And you say, well, why don't I keep the kids and you go out? just your heart turned out, anything that you want. And the other thing I was going to ask you is a husband who says, tell me what I need to do in order to get you to love me. If you come, that's not humility. Yeah. That's almost an accusation. And I'm not saying that that's what you suggested, yeah, but I've heard that. Just tell me what to do to get you to love me.
Yeah.
Is not the question that you're suggesting.
No, that's self-centered because you're trying to get something from her. No, what you're saying is, it's obvious I'm not meeting your needs. And, the Bible says the husband's to try to meet his wife's needs, find out what they are and meet them. I mean, that's our job. It's saying, what can I do that would enrich your life? What can I do that would make life easier for you? What could I do that would be helpful to you?
Wes is driving 2 hours, and my guess is there's another Wes on the road, and there's probably a female who feels the same way. Would you pray for those who are saying, I want to meet my spouse's needs?
Yeah. Father, you know what we're talking about, and you know Wes, and you know everything about him and everything about his wife and about his children. I do pray that your spirit will touch his spirit and give him wisdom, wisdom on how to approach her, wisdom on how to seek to meet her needs, whatever those needs are. And I pray not only for him, but for others, as Chris has said, who may be listening today, who are in a similar experience. Father, we know we can't make a spouse do anything, but we know that we can express our love, our care, the desire to enrich their lives, the desire to help them, the desire to meet their needs. And so I pray you'll give him the attitude of Christ, who was willing to step down and give his life for us. Give him an attitude of being willing to step down and seek to find ways that he can minister to his wife. In the name of Christ, amen.
Amen. This is exactly the same kind of situation that you and Carolyn were in, years and years ago. And you two could have gone separate ways.
Absolutely, Chris. And I remember when I said to God, I don't know what else to do. I've done everything I know to do, and it's not working. And there came to my mind a visual image of Jesus on his knees washing the feet of his disciples. And I really heard God say, that's the problem in your marriage. You don't have the attitude of Christ. And I asked God to change my heart because I knew my attitude was, look, if you'd listen to me, woman, we could have a good marriage, And God changed my heart. And three questions made it practical for me. One of them is, honey, what could I do to help you? And the other is, how could I make your life easier? And the third one was, how can I be a better husband to you? And she was willing to give me answers when I asked her. Looking back on it, I didn't know anything about love languages then, but looking back on it, her answers were really telling me how to love her, And within 3 months, she started asking me those questions. Mm-hmm. And that's when the marriage really turned around.
And look at that, that fissure, that struggle that you went through. We were talking about this yesterday. It was almost like the death of your marriage in a way, your dream for the marriage, and then the resurrection was, I'm going to be like Jesus, and I'm going to get down on my knees, and I'm going to serve my wife.
Yeah.
Dr. Gary Chapman is with us today. We'll take more of your calls, and there's some great questions here. There's honestly some really sad questions, really big struggles. Don't give up. Keep listening. Keep loving. Dr. Gary Chapman's with us today. Did the love languages change with the older you get? Is it normal for a person to have a love language that shifts?
Chris, I think basically the love language tends to stay with us for a lifetime. But having said that, I think there may be stages of life or circumstances where another love language may jump to the top, especially if number one and number two are very close. For example, if a mother has 2 or 3 preschool children, acts of service may not be her love language, but during those years, it's likely to jump to the top because she's overwhelmed with all that she has to do. Or let's say as a person gets older, their number one and their number two are very close, and they're getting enough of their number one, they may begin to feel like, oh, I don't know, I think number two has become number one. But if they stop getting number one, they'll quickly say, oh, no, that's still number one. But I think typically it does stay with us for a lifetime.
Which takes us to Indiana. Travis is on the line. Hi, Travis. You're on with Dr. Gary Chapman.
Hi. So me and my wife both know what our two primary love languages are. And, you know, when we're doing well in our marriage, that's not as hard to do. But when we're struggling like we are now, we don't feel like any of our needs are being met and everything seems like a five. It's hard to know how to proceed when hers specifically is quality time, when we can't have any of that with the kids. And when we are together, it seems to be arguing. And it's just, how do you go from feeling like none of your needs are being met to back to healthy?
Well, I think, Travis, each of us has to start with ourselves. It's always easy to see the flaws of the other person and where they're failing and to identify our own need that we're not feeling loved. But somebody has to take the initiative to love the other person even though they're not loving you. You know, the Bible says, for example, we love God because God first loved us. He initiated it and we reciprocate. So if one person is willing to say to themselves, boy, I don't feel any love coming from her. All I get is negative stuff. But you say, God, give me the ability to do things for her, to do things that will enrich her life, no matter how I feel. And you do those things, not because you're emotionally motivated to do them, but because you choose to do them, knowing that love stimulates love. And when she hears you affirming her, doing positive things for her, rather than condemning her or talking about how awful things are, something happens inside of her. So I would just say, ask God to give you the ability to be the starter, to be the initiator, to love her when she's not lovely. And whatever will make her feel loved, whatever will make her life easier, you busy yourself doing those things. And God can give you the ability to do that. I was just talking about that earlier in my own life when God turned my heart around and gave me an attitude to do that. There's something about the power of influence that we often overlook. We can't change the spouse, but we can greatly influence them. You can change yourself, your thoughts and your behavior. You can't change her, but you can influence her. And love tends to stimulate love.
And writing out a list then, I can do this, this, and this. Yeah, but I don't feel like doing this, 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 and this. Okay, no, love is not always the feeling of love. It is moving toward the other person. And so that's what you're suggesting that he can do.
Yeah, love is fundamental. In the Bible, love is fundamentally an attitude, a way of thinking about the other person. That I want to enrich their life. I want to help them. I want to make them, help them reach their goals in life. Yeah. It's an attitude, then it has appropriate behavior. And that touches the emotions. That stimulates the emotions. It doesn't start with emotion. Love in the Bible starts with a way of thinking and a way of behaving.
Acting towards someone. Travis, I pray that that will be a real catalyst for you today. Let me take Joe's call, who's listening in Hawaii with Dr. Gary Chapman. Hi, Joe. Go right ahead.
Hi. I just wanted to make a comment on Dr. Chapman's work, and I'm so appreciative of it. When he mentioned the tingling and the shallowness of it, when I was a non-believer, the popular media always said, follow the tingling, right? And the tingling is all. But then I learned out of a pattern watching these relationships, again, as a non-believer, come crashing down, I started to find out as I grew older that I came from an alcoholic family. And so the tingly I felt was being a codependent for a holic. That kind of made me, okay, I got to not follow the tingly and just look for a good man in that sense. I did meet my future husband, and the tingly was a little there, but not huge. And we both got born again after that. And we followed what the Bible said, because we both knew our past relationships and type of interactions were not something that's healthy. So, and actually listening and believing the Bible and being in a good Bible-believing church, I mean, the love has grown exponentially. We've been married over 25 years now.
Wow. So you're saying that you have to consciously choose against the tingly or going toward that. Gary, what do you say to that?
Yeah, no, I think it's exactly right. And the other thing you're doing, Joe, is you're reminding us of the help of God that we have in all of this. You know, when you came to know God in a personal way, both of you got involved in a Christian fellowship. A personal walk with God is an essential to really being our best. Because when we get to know God, we draw close to Christ. His Spirit works in our hearts to make us more and more like Christ. And it's pretty easy to live with somebody who's like Jesus, you know? So the more I become like Jesus, the easier it is for my spouse and vice versa. So, yeah, you're mentioning that spiritual dimension, I think, is very, very important. The other thing that I appreciate you sharing is the fact that we don't have to have that super, super high emotional euphoric feeling in order to have a good marriage. We will have positive feelings toward each other if we're speaking each other's love language, but that's not the euphoric state that we're calling the tingles is not the foundation for marriage. The foundation for marriage is an attitude. I'm here for your benefit. I'm here to enrich your life. Two people who have an attitude of love will have a good marriage. Two selfish people who have the attitude, you're not making me happy. You're not doing this. You're not doing that. Two selfish people will never have a good marriage. Marriage is based on genuine love, the choice to love. And for those of us who are Christians, we have the asset that the love of God is poured out in our hearts by the Holy Spirit. So we can say, Lord, pour it out. I want to be a lover. And he'll answer that prayer.
Well, and that the empowerment of that to be able to love and to love people who are unlovely, you know, at the same time. This is real, just flown by, Gary. It always does when you come on. And we had full phone lines. And I'm sorry we didn't get to more of your calls. We could do this for another whole week. But thank you for being in the studio. It's great to see your face. And to hug your neck.
Hey, thank you, Chris. Good to be with you and enjoyed our time together. And thanks for those who called in.
What a great hour of questions with Dr. Gary Chapman. And coming up next week, the start of a two-part series on special needs families. You'll meet Angela and Grace Anna Rogers. Don't miss this heartwarming discussion about a little girl with a big heart and a beautiful voice. That's coming up next week. And remember, today's featured resource is the book by Dr. Chapman and Jolene Filo, Sharing Love Abundantly in Special Needs Families. Go to 5lovelanguages.com to find out more. A big thank you today to our production team, Steve Wick, Janice Todd, Chris Papendick, and Ryan McConaughey. Building Relationships with Dr. Gary Chapman is a production of Moody Radio in association with Moody Publishers, a ministry of Moody Bible Institute. Thanks for listening.